Hey everyone, welcome to Be Love, Do Good. I'm your host, Christy Hayes, a wife, mama of two, founder of Be Strong Story, and the author of The Lunchbox Note, a true story about how a simple lunchbox note changed my family's life and mission forever. If you're looking to break out of your comfort zone and love others in a way that brings about real change in your community, we've got you covered. The Be Love, Do Good podcast brings you inspiring stories and authentic conversations that empower you to be love and do good wherever you are. Stepping out of your comfort zones can be hard, but if we do it together, we'll see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Hey everyone, welcome to Be Love, Do Good podcast. We are so grateful to have Dr. John Delony on the show. Dr. Delony is a two-time national best-selling author, and we're diving into his new book, Building a Non-Anxious Life. Who doesn't want that? He's also a mental health expert and host of his own show. He has two PhDs. I'm not really sure how he had time to do that with a family and all of the things, and he has two decades of experience in counseling and crisis response. Most people know our show is all about loving others and helping us get out of our comfort zone and see others and showing up in our communities. But I found that even in my own personal experience, really hard when we have anxious lives. And so I'm so excited for you to be on today and kind of help us with this foundational core of building a non-anxious life so we can love others. And so thanks for being on today.
Well, thanks for the invite. It's good to talk to a Texan.
Yeah.
I don't get to do that very often.
A Texan that never thought she'd be a Texan again. So there you go.
It's got a tractor beam to it, man.
I know.
It just pulls you back.
Sucks you back. So before we kind of get in the nitty gritty, and for those of you who might be watching this on video, you can see all of the notes. I have lots of things to talk to you about today. But I'd love just to start out with just three things you'd love the audience to know about you. Maybe they're interesting. Maybe they're boring. It doesn't really matter. I just want them to know just a little bit more about you.
That's a great question. I'm married to someone who's way smarter than me. She was Dr. Delony way before me. And I've got two great kids and a bunch of chickens, some dogs. And so that's one thing, I guess. That's the gang. And the second thing is, my wife told me right before I took this job, she's like, hey, I need you to hear me say I love you, and you're really weird. And so this may not work. And I was like, what do you mean?
Some good encouragement.
It was just her being honest, like, yes. Hey, you drove a Prius for a long time and you deer hunt a lot. And those two things don't go together. And you like heavy metal music and you go to Sunday school all the time. And so it was just a strange mix. And so I think I'm an introvert that also likes running around. And so I've just kind of got an odd mix of things that I like to just dig into. The last thing, I'll answer the question you asked earlier. I missed out on a lot of fun things in my 20s because I was always in graduate school. And then once I got into my 30s and I started getting a real salary and my friends started being successful, I missed out on a lot of cool stuff because I was back in grad school. So it all comes at a cost. But that's made my late 30s and early 40s a lot of fun.
So now you're just like living it up. You're like doing all
nerd.
The
just
doing
well. All I finished after the book tour, and I kind of landed. And somebody asked me. I have a bad problem with somebody asks a singular question, and it haunts me, and I can't get out of my head, and I just go down rabbit holes. And that's how I've ended up with all these degrees. And I told my wife, "Hey, just so you know, like I'm at a place where if I wasn't doing what I'm doing, I'd go get another degree." And she was like, "You can do that. You're just gonna need to get a house because you're gonna be single too."
So, right. Anyway. Right. I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. So I want to just dig in right into the book because I have a lot of questions for you, a lot of things that I've just even been journaling. There's some journaling prompts in there. And one of the things that you say, and I love just to hear your personal story, is that writing The Non-Anxious Life nearly did you in and was one of the hardest things that you have ever done. And that's knowing that you have already done two PhDs. So tell me a little bit about why that was so hard.
I think ultimately the hard part of it was I wasn't living this out. I was standing in front of a metaphorical classroom lecturing America on how they can fix their life. And it wasn't ringing true because the data was right, but I wasn't doing this. And it was strange. I was coming off again, I'm an introvert. I didn't have any social media before I started this job a few years ago. I never did media. I didn't know how any of this stuff works. This was never my, this wasn't my goal, right? And so I'm coming off the heels of a number one book, and I didn't have any reference point for what that would do for my life. It just changed everything. Mm. And we went straight in the publishing team was like, dude, we got to get another one out. So we'll go right into a new book. And in real time, I'm writing about these things that help you have a whole life. And I'm watching my relationship with my little kids, with my younger kids, disintegrate. Mm-hmm. I'm watching my marriage suddenly get the same fractures in it that I had a decade ago when I lost my, I went bananas with anxiety. I started watching like my body responding to things that it hasn't done that in a decade. And so when I say this book did me in, it was really pulling back the covers on this. I just kind of duct taped over the challenges in my life again. And here I am, the guy with the show. And here I am, the guy with the book. And here I am, the guy that has supposed to have all these answers. And it was a control-alt-delete for me. And so I think I may have mentioned this at the end of the book, but about halfway through, man, I started completely over, went all the way back to the beginning, and it was really me pulling up a seat at you know, a local Rosa's and just saying, me too, guys, pass the nachos, because I'm at this table with you all. And so it took on a very personal tone.
It's funny. I always say that the podcast episodes that I do, people that really know me know the ones that I do are the ones that I'm struggling with or the ones that I need answers to. I'd love to kind of just go back to just the foundation. If you could just kind of define what is anxiety, because whether people like really struggle with it or maybe they've struggled with it for years and years and years, or for me personally, I've talked to different women my age-ish, or maybe they have different career paths that they take, whatever it is, they find themselves very surprised that they're struggling with anxiety. For me, it was that. It was, I've lived this easy peasy, chill, happy, joyful, bubbly life. And then all of a sudden, some grief and some trauma came in and like anxiety. I was like, what is it? I'm having a heart attack. I'm dying. But it was just anxiety. And so for some of us, we've struggled with this for a long time. And for some of us, it's like, what the heck is this? And I can't get this under control. So can you just define what anxiety is?
Yeah, all it is an alarm system. That's all it is. It's your body trying to get your attention and let you know that you're not safe. It's detected something in your environment or several things, and it wants to get your attention and let you know, hey, 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 hey. So in the book, I describe it as a smoke alarm. It's a smoke alarm in your kitchen. It's not the problem. The problem is that something's on fire in your house. That's the issue. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I think so many people think other people get this thing, right? And they don't understand that it's really coming from the inside out. It's just your body trying to get your attention because it loves you and it wants to live to see tomorrow and see the day after that. And so suddenly our entire culture gets anxious overnight, seemingly. And the only cultural response we have is that everybody's suddenly broken. And here's a million different cures, a new yoga program, a new purse, a new husband, a new job, a new housekeeper, a new add on some sort of something. Instead of us asking what I think is a much more instructive yet harder question to answer, which is, whoa, why did we all get anxious at the same time? If it's just an alarm, then what is all of our bodies detecting at the same time that's suggesting that we're not all okay? Mm-hmm. And what does that mean about the world we've constructed for ourselves that we now call normal? That may mean we got to go back to square one. So it's a much more terrifying proposition, but I think it's getting to the root of the issue.
Well, I think you even just saying it's an alarm for our bodies. You know, I'm sure you talk about it in your book, you know, body keeps a score. And even in counseling that I've had, it's just, hey, this is just an alarm. Like, you know, sometimes you're anxious for being anxious. Like, I know sometimes at night, I know it's coming. And I'm like, oh God, it's almost 3:56. That's when I wake up. So it's coming. And then I'm anxious that it's going to be 3:56 and I'm going to be anxious. And so it like just kind of goes. So I love that you just said, it's an alarm system. One of the things that I loved on page 56, you talk about when we come to understand that our body is getting our attention by sounding that anxiety alarm, it's easy to think we are no longer ourselves. And for those of us who have experienced anxiety, I remember a time when I was in such grief and anxiety that I said, I will never be joyful again. I will never be happy again. And I am usually joy most. I love life. Like, I'm like, oh, this is my favorite thing, and this is my favorite thing, and this is my favorite thing. And nothing was my favorite thing. And I love what you said. It's easy to think we are no longer ourselves, that we have an affliction, that we're broken, that we have a defect, but we're not. We are not damaged goods. Our bodies have just finally said things have got to change. Talk to me a little bit about that.
I'll just speak directly to the cultural narrative for women. You have to go be a co-earner. You have to go be as successful, if not more so, in some of these workplaces. You have to also have a whole bunch of kids. You have to be a perfect wife. You have to be sexually active into your 90s. You have to be super attractive and fit 24/7, 365. You have to be the perfect mom. You have to also be involved in the local school. I mean, it's all these things that individual variables are great, but this idea that you can do it all at the same time and without, go make $1 million. That's amazing. You're going to miss some little league games. Mm-hmm. And that's okay if that's a trade you choose to make, but just know there's a trade. And we don't have that psychology. And so what we have is a generation of women that have been served up this giant guilt factory, because mm-hmm. guilt sells a lot of stuff. And there's no way to turn. I watched my wife go from a really excellent elementary school teacher to a nationally renowned children's literacy professor. She taught teachers how to teach kids how to read. And as a researcher, it developed a reputation really quick, like an amazing reputation. And then her husband went bananas. And so we moved, and she took a job at a local school. So 1 year she went from esteemed Dr. Deloney to, hey, miss, to she got pregnant and said, I'm just going to stay home, to multiple miscarriages, to I don't even know who I am anymore. Am I this researcher? Am I this stay-at-home mom? Is my body even work the way it's supposed to? Am I this teacher? Like, all of this identity went away. And everywhere she turned, she was told she was the problem. You got to fix this. Here's what you got to do. Here's what you got to do. And so we experience this, or especially women experience this, and then they wake up at 3 a.m. every night. And instead of asking ourselves, what is my body trying to get my attention? Because it's interrupting one of the most important functions it has. Mm-hmm. To try to keep me safe. Instead of doing that, we go to the doctor, and the doctor goes, oh yeah, here's some X, Y, and Z so you can be unconscious. If your body's going to keep waking you up, we'll just knock you out, right? Or, hey, if my marriage is falling apart, my heart rate is, every time I start to drive up in my driveway, my heartbeat goes up 50 mm-hmm. beats a minute. And every time I look at my teenager and they slam the door, then we say, oh, you've got a thing. You've got this thing called anxiety, and you need to go get counseling, and you need to get fixed, because instead of looking at the environment that your body's trying to respond to. And so I think it's this, I just am rejecting this idea that all of our bodies in the Western world all failed at the same time. It's not true. I think our bodies are working really, really well. I just think as a culture, we don't like what our bodies are trying to tell us, which is we've created a world our bodies can't exist in. And we can't do it all at the same time without consequence. And we can't all be responsible for being everything all the time to everybody. And we don't have a script for what comes next then.
So let's talk about that script a little bit. So let's just, we'll use me. Me as an example.
You said that very gingerly, like, about me.
Well, maybe we'll use me. Well, me or people like me. So
we'll just use you. It'll be fun.
We'll use me. Okay. Very driven. Have always either been an entrepreneur or leading something, have two children who I love very much. So everything, growth is one of my values. So I always want to be growing, want to be doing better. Can I be the best? All those things. God got a hold of me about 9 years ago to realize my identity is not in what I do. So I think I'm learning from other women who are similar to my personality, that there usually is a piece in their life where they are so overwhelmed or so anxious that they kind of have to surrender at some point and say, this is not my identity. So already done that. So my identity is not in all the things that I do or the accolades that I get. But God has wired me to be driven. I'm not wired to just be, you know, just do one thing, probably. I do a lot of things. And I feel like I do have a healthy relationship with those things now, with counseling and, you know, meditation and just all the things that just I've learned that I can't do. And so I want to just talk about a little bit those women who are driven, who do feel like they can impact a lot of different ways, but they feel guilty as moms for doing all the things. I think you hit it the nail on the head when you're like, you have to do this, 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 this. You know, you named off all those things. And I'm like, oh, yeah, wait, we do have to do that. And we do feel like we have to do that. So talk to the woman who's listening right now who is maybe driven. Maybe she's a mom. Maybe she feels like she has to be at the PTA, but she also has to be at the board meeting. And she also has to, you know, work out. And she also has to do that. Talk to that mom that is feeling like she wants to be great at things, but she doesn't feel good at anything right now.
Yeah. Well, I think if you are trying to do everything all at once, you're not going to be. You can't possibly be, right? If Patrick Mahomes, who's overnight become one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history, if he also tried to punt and run for passes and be the running back at the same time, he would be run out of the NFL. He'd be no good, right? He knew his role for this period of time. And so I think I always want to ask somebody when they sit down and they explain it just like you did. I got all these different competing things going on. I always want to exhale and ask, where are those stories coming from? Who is painting the picture? Who wrote the story that you're trying to live into that says this is what the perfect employee looks like, the perfect mom looks like? Who put that script in your mind, and is it true? And I often ask people to write down these stories that are like, I screwed this up. I'm a terrible mom. I can't believe I missed the board meeting for a dumb PTA meeting. I can't believe I'm sitting in this 1 hour play where all these middle school kids are forgetting their lines. Well, I could be, quote unquote, doing something of more value, which is my job, right? Who told you that story? Number one, and is it true? Let's just pull the stories apart. Is that true? 99% of the stories we carry around are not true. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, I think we set things into motion and we then get frustrated at what they take to continue. We set responsibilities for ourselves and we don't like that those responsibilities hang around because there's a prevailing cultural narrative that we are the center of our universe. Our main goal is continuous growth, because if you're not growing, you're dying. And that means never stop moving. Mm-hmm. And as my friend Ian Simpkins says, if busyness is your drug, rest will feel like stress. Yeah. And I remember him saying that over lunch, and I just was like, I wouldn't hit you because you're a minister, but man, it's really close, right?
Yeah, right.
But if you're going, 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 mm-hmm. going, going, and then you choose to have kids, what you're choosing to do is to exhale and say, okay, the most important thing that was in my life is not the most important thing in my life anymore. Mm-hmm. And that may feel uncomfortable. That may be a story that we don't like, but that's the reality, because we made humans. We brought them into the world, and this is men and women. And I went through the same thing. And if we choose to take a job that requires a lot of travel, well, that's us making a choice that we're going to miss some things locally. And that's a choice we made. Mm-hmm. And that's why one of the things, if you're trying to get healed, you're trying to heal your body from anxiety, trying to get those alarms to finally start shutting off, the first thing you have to do is choose reality. What is the world I've created for myself right now? Am I in a house that I can't afford, but it was the perfect house and it looks just like Chip and Joanna drew it up and it's the right one, it's the right one, it's the right one? You can't afford that house. Or I need to have this car, I have to have this stroller, I have to have this car seat, my kids need to wear this clothes and go to this school. You can't afford that. And your banker will give you the money. Ford Motor Company will give you the money. Your mortgage company will give you the money. But your body knows we're not safe. Because mm-hmm. if one domino falls, this whole house falls down. And so our bodies, if you think of it in that context, your body would be failing if it let you sleep all night. Your marriage is falling apart. Your spouse right there in the bed next to you is 1,000 miles away from you. Your body would be failing you if it let you sleep. Mm-hmm. If your kids in the room across the hall, if they won't talk to you, they won't be in the same room as you, your body would be failing you. If you're lonely and don't have friends that you can go be honest with, if your job's not safe, if you owe a bunch of money, your body would be failing you if it wasn't anxious, if it wasn't winding you up to see like, hey, look, yeah. there's yeah. tigers everywhere, right? So I to that mom who's exhausted and who really loves her work, I would ask her, where are those stories coming from? Are they true? And then here is something that's become increasingly more instructive that I never thought I would say, right? I was born and raised in Texas, so I'm this obnoxious Texas male who also went to a lot of grad school. So I got all these, like, and this never occurred to me. And it was when my marriage was, I mean, it was us, we sat across the table and said, let's be adults about this. Are we done? Are we both going to cash out? And both of us said no. We've been together for 22 years now almost. But it got real dicey. And the way forward for us was to reverse engineer. What do we want this house to feel like when one of us walks in from being out all day? Let's build for that. And I said, I want the house to feel warm, and I want there to be laughter, and I want you to throw a wet towel at me when I walk in the door, and I want to hear about the book you're writing, and I want my son who's 13 to make a fart noise, and I want my daughter to just come at me with a sword in a sword fight I didn't know we were in. And then my wife said, then that means you've got to come home differently from work. Hmm. You've got to drive down the driveway differently. You got to go see a count, right? So it began to instruct, how do you want this thing to feel like? Well, then I can't be at everything. I'm not going to be in the PTI. I can't take this promotion. Mm-hmm. I can't have a fourth kid. That's when you start getting to the real tough responses.
I love on one of the six choices that you talk about building a non-anxious life, the choosing reality. I actually reread that last night.
It's brutal, man. It's brutal.
It is brutal because I am choosing something, but at the same time, I want to make sure other pieces of my life feel chosen too. And so being okay to let some things go that maybe I feel like I couldn't let go before, let go. Like, I love the part where you said, who is telling you that you're not a good mom? If you miss one, like, play that you know, that your kids don't even care about, or like a concert that all the moms are at and they're all texting you about what went on and you're not there and you feel guilty, but your kid actually could give a care. They're like, mom, do not come. Like, I'm embarrassed. I'm in this thing. So like, don't even come. Like, but what is important is a gymnastics meet, a soccer game. I love that you said, like, who is telling you that story? Like, where are we getting that? Like, is it social media? Is it, you know, our friends who aren't meaning to make us feel a certain way? But are we, I think comparison is a big thing. When you're the only one of your friend group or mom group who has a certain way that they do things, it can feel lonely. It can feel like you're the only one. And so I love that you said that.
Well, and I think it's important for, well, thank you. I think it's important for every parent to hear me say this. The greatest gift you can give your kids is to be, as Becky Kennedy calls it, a sturdy, regulated adult. Mm-hmm. And what that means is you got to do what you have to do to be well. The greatest gift you can give your kids is for you as an adult to have your own friends. Not the greatest gift I can give my kids is to frantically and maniacally bend the rules of time, of the space-time continuum to get to every game, everything, every room, every cupcake, every... That's not a gift to our kids, because our kids wear that stress. They wear that anxiousness. They wear that maniacal energy, and they blame themselves for it, and they try to solve it.
Because you're coming in hot. Like, if I'm trying to do all those things, I'm coming in hot to all those things, and right. And my kid knows I actually am late, you know, late because I was at something else, and I missed it, and then absolutely.
Or imagine like, and I've been there. Hey, will you go get the thing? I've got to make cookies for your classroom.
Right,
and it's like,
right,
you've
right.
just defeated the cookie making for the classroom part.
Right,
right.
Right.
And so it's reimagining, what do we want this thing to feel like? And that means when your kid says, will you make cookies for the class, or the teacher sends that guilt-laden email, it is, no, because I want my house to feel full of peace, and I've got a board report due for my job, and I've got X, and I've got Y. And at nighttime, I do bedtimes, and I don't miss that. Mm-hmm. So the thing that's going to get on the back, that's going to get cast aside, is cookies. And you know what? We're all going to live. Right? We're all going to live.
Right. And I tell now, I mean, I think I'm at an age now and kind of know myself well enough that I'm okay to say to my friends or to say to the teacher, these are the things that you can count on me for. Like, I'm really great at these. Love these. This does not stress me out. But these other things, like, I'm never going to say yes to. Like, when you want me to bring a snack, it's never going to happen. Like, just take me off the email. Never going to bring a snack. Never going to do it. But if you need me to decorate for something, I'm your girl. Like, I'm going to decorate all day long. So, you know, and even telling my kids that. I tell my kids that. Like, mom is not probably coming to all of the parties. That's just not what I'm going to do. But what I am going to do is take all your friends, Holden, to play basketball outside. And we're all going to play football together. And we're all going to play basketball together. And I'm going to be in there with you doing that.
Well, and it's one of the great gifts we give to our kids is they have to hold disappointment. Yeah. They have to hold, I wanted the world to be like this, but it's not. Mm. And that's a gift to our children.
Absolutely.
Right? Otherwise, we're like going into the gym and we're lifting all the weights for our kids and then we're wondering why they're not strong.
Right.
That's on us. We have to stop picking up all the weights for them. And that means I got to watch my kids struggle. I got to watch
so
my
hard.
Kid fail. I got to watch my kid be mad and frustrated and upset. Ugh, it breaks my heart, man. It breaks. We just got some tough news about my daughter who's 8. I called my wife and said, I just want to weep. I just want to cry. Mm. And she said, oh gosh, John. Like,
right? I love your wife.
But I feel like I painted a terrible picture. My wife's amazing. But it was something that I have no control over.
Yeah.
Right? And I want to fix it for my daughter. And I can't. I can't. Yeah. And that means I just got to say, I can't fix this, but I'll hold your hand and I'll be with you as you experience it, right?
I tell my daughter she's a little bit of a perfectionist. And I always just say, like, it's good enough. It's good enough. And I always say, in my house, I want you to fail, and I'll say it like a Texan, fail, whale, fail, well. Because when she's in my house, she can fail, and we can pick up the pieces together, and I can walk her through it. But if she fails for the first time when she's 22 and faces disappointment for the first time when she's out of my house, and it wrecks her to her core, and it wrecks her faith, and it you know, all those things, that's when I should be nervous. That's when I should be worried.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about the opposite. So we talked about like kind of anxiety, what that feels like, what that looks like in our life. What is the opposite of the non-anxious life?
I think it's the frantic, frenetic life that we all live, that we live in homes that are ginormous, surrounded by clutter and stuff. And we have calendars that are just like, I have a calendar sometimes that if I'm 5 minutes late to my first meeting on Monday, it will affect me on Thursday. That's madness, right? We have lives that our margin is so thin when it comes to time and relationships and money that if gas goes up 25 cents, it's catastrophic, right? If the air conditioner stops, we don't, was it 60 or 70% of Americans don't have access to $1,000? Don't have access to it, much less have it, right? That is such a tight rope people are walking. And of course your body is frantic. This is a little bit closer to home for many of us. If a elementary school or middle school summer league soccer coach is telling your family what y'all are going to do for the next 14 years worth of summers, because if you don't, well, then your kid's never going to get the scholarship, and you know how expensive colleges are, and they're never going to make the team, and I see something special in your kid. And, or, hey, daddy, I really feel like doing X, Y, and Z. That X, Y, and Z, we can't afford it. I don't see you as excited about it. And suddenly my daughter or my son knows that their feelings hold up my entire house. Mm. And they can't carry that. So it becomes an anxious, frenetic, frantic. And then we snap at each other. We're not sleeping. We just go grab more food and more food or another drink and another drink. Mm-hmm. We Netflix ourselves to death. And we wonder why everything just feels like we're in ash.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about what it feels like to have a non-anxious life. You talk about that there's hope on the other side of anxiety. Yeah. And I love that you say that, because for those of us who are either in this life of anxiety, they're waking up, they're feeling this, there is hope on the other side. Some of us feel like, is there another side? Are we ever going to be out of this? So talk to me about, what does it look like to have a non-anxious life? What does it look like on the other side? And maybe personally, you could kind of talk about that, because you've been through it.
I've been there. So I started making a list while I was writing this book, like, how is my life different now than it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago? And having a non-anxious life, my family members still passed away. My buddy still got cancer. I was sitting with a family who's got a almost 5-year-old, and she will not be alive by the end of March with pediatric cancer. So having a non-anxious life doesn't inoculate you from the bad stuff. The world's just a messy, ugly place. Mm-hmm. But my body has always stayed with me, and it allows me to be present with hurting people. When my cousin died, because 15 years ago, my wife and I decided, hey, what if we just stopped letting banks control our life and we just paid everything off? It took us 15 years to do that. 15 miserable years of doing that, of driving Corollas and old trucks that may or may not start before work. Then when my cousin suddenly passed away, we just bought Southwest tickets and flew down to see him down there in Houston. And it never occurred to us to even look because we knew we had the money there. Mm. And so it gave us the privilege to just go be real sad, right? An abusive boss or a jerk boss or an unethical boss asks you to do something and you can just smile and say, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to leave. That abusive spouse, you can say, hey, I'm just going to step out. I'm going to go take a break and we're going to meet with a marriage counselor or a divorce attorney, but I'm not doing this. This is unsafe, mm-hmm. right? And so it allows you this magical world of peace and freedom that I think we talk about, but we don't even know what that means anymore. Mm-hmm. Imagine waking up, and I say this all the time, but imagine just waking up and having coffee because you want to, not because you have to, or just falling asleep. That's the one that catches most people. What if you just like went to bed? No drugs, no office reruns, no scroll. You just laid in bed and went to sleep, right? What if you liked being around your husband or your wife? What if you just liked that? Or your kids, they rolled their eyes when you were around, but they loved you, mm-hmm. right? And they were goofy and silly, but my son said something the other day that I thought, this is my proudest parenting moment. I was asking him about a friend, and I said, does your friend even like their parents? And he said, yeah, they get frustrated with their parents, but I told them, I get frustrated with you guys. And the fact that he felt free enough just to tell me that, let me know that he knows that I'm not threatened by his feelings, and I'm strong enough to stand in the gap there, and that he can be honest with me, and that he loves me enough to say, yeah, there's times you drive me crazy because you're old and I'm 14 and I know everything, right? Right? So it's everything in between. But that's the peaceful life, and it's not having the right cars and the right houses and the right mm-hmm. neighborhoods. It's just not it. It's just been a myth. It's been a lie. It's been able to wake up and ask yourself, what do I want to do today, and who do I want to do it with?
For those of us listening and who might have struggling with anxiety or not know quite where to start, so in your book, you talk about just six choices to make. And maybe some who are listening are thinking, I used to be this very loving person. I used to love others well. I used to see others. And right now I'm so stuck in my own fear and stress and all of the things. I'm thinking about myself and what I'm not loving well like I used to. I don't know where to start. I feel so anxious. Where would you tell them to even start? Where would you, if they are just in a tornado of anxiety every single day and they're like, will this ever end? Where would you tell them to start?
I took those six choices and I made a non-diagnostic, but like it's an anxiety test. Just to, like, where would I even aim? Mm-hmm. And I think most people need to sit down and begin to articulate reality. What's the state of my marriage? What's the state of my finances? What's the state of my relationship with my kids? What's the state of my job? Is it going to go away? Right? I think taking inventory, the same as if you just felt overwhelmed by how much money you owe, you would just sit down and write all your debts out. Or if you found that your husband was cheating on you, you would sit down and say, we're going to have this conversation. We got to, we have to, we can't go forward. So it's really the diagnostic or the inventory. Like, where are we? The second place I would start is choosing connection, choosing other people. Mm-hmm. And I think our culture has sold us a lie. My community has done it, the mental health community. So that's my gang. That's my people. And we have told people over the last 150 years that mental health, if you will, emotional health, is just all the right thoughts in the right order. And it's not true. You have to have other people that you sit across a table from or sit kneecap to kneecap with or with having a cup of coffee. And you have to be able to say, do you still love me? Even though you know all of that, can I tell you the hard stuff? Can I tell you the scary stuff? Can I tell you the good stuff? My kid got the part in the play. And I'm tired of hedging on the good stuff and only telling people the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. Me and my husband had a barn burner last night, and it was awesome. Can I just say that out loud? Yep, you can call me. Right? Can we say these things? And our bodies are co-regulated with other people. Mm-hmm. And we've just taken them out, and we text everybody, and we Facebook everybody. And so I would ask people to sit down and write down, what's the state of things in your life? And then share that with another person. And I think that's where healing begins.
I love it. Well, I could talk about all the things, but as we kind of end, where can people get to know you more? Maybe, I mean, they could even call on your show and get some different advice. I love it. I was kind of listening to some the other day. I was like, wow. I was like, you have strangers calling in and saying some of the most vulnerable like it's a call-in show where they can just call in and talk to you about anything or ask any question. I was like amazed. I think I would, if I did that, I would have to like, you know, disguise my voice. Or like I would be
most,
so.
Most people disguise their name and their location for sure.
Got it.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
So you hear it all. And I'd love for people just to know how to get to know you more, where to get your book, all that stuff, if they want to continue just learning more about how to build this non-anxious life.
I think the best way is listen to the show, the John Deloney Show, or Dr. Dude, we spent so long, months, with some of the best creative minds I've ever been around. And that's the name we came up with. I wanted to call it like Dragons and Lasers or something. And they're like, how about the Dr. John Deloney Show?
You're like, sounds great.
Yeah, it's whatever.
Catchy.
But they call in, and I'll tell you this, it was heartbreaking because the first four or five shows, again, I have no background with this. I would ask, oh my gosh, why are you calling me? Like, why are you calling? You cheat on your husband. Like, why are you calling me?
Your producer's like, no, don't say that. Well, just say that.
Well, it was just so straight. Like, oh my goodness, your child has cancer. Why are you calling me? And every, to a person, the answer was always, dude, I've got nobody. Mm. And that was very instructive about the state of our culture, which is I feel safer calling a podcaster or a YouTube guy that I've never met, will never meet in person, than I do talking to somebody in my immediate world. Whew, man. Talk about an anxious life. So you can listen to the show anywhere you get podcasts, and it's all over YouTube, or you can pick up my book anywhere. It's in all the stores and Amazon and johndeloney.com. But you can follow me on Instagram at johndeloney2. And that's mine.
I mean, I kind of appreciate that it's all the same and it's very easy to remember.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Well, awesome.
Thanks so much for being on. Thanks for just sharing your heart with us and just all that you're learning and have learned. And I really appreciate it. I think our listeners are going to truly hear this and think, okay, I got to start somewhere. I want to make sure that I'm building this non-anxious life so I can be me again. And
it's so possible. So possible.
So, so possible. So there's hope. There's hope. If you hear anything today, it is that there is hope. So thanks for bringing hope to us today.